Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Get ready, folks. We have good martinis for conservatives to close out the work week. We also want to let you know that today we're sponsored by Simply Safe Home Security for 24/7 protection you can really trust. Go to simplysafe.com/ricochet. And as we wait to get into the first martini here, just a quick follow-up on yesterday. Jim was giving me a little bit of grief, and for very good reason, as the Chicago Bears signed a backup quarterback from Tampa for nearly $15 million a year over 3 years. We were talking about what the Bears were going to do with the rest of their quarterbacks. They ended up cutting Jay Cutler on Thursday, Jim, and I know this will make you excited. Here's Ian Rappaport from the NFL Network.
Well, the New York Jets do have some interest in Jay Cutler, and I'm told he has interest in them as well. He is the best veteran quarterback option out there. I would expect some sort of contact between Cutler and the Jets some point soon.
So basically, we're at the seventh grade study hall version of this, Jim. Both sides know that they like each other. And maybe at the next junior high dance, they'll actually talk to each other. We'll see.
You know, Greg, it's fake news. It's fake news. It's sad. Pathetic. The media making up crazy stuff. I'm just going to remain in absolute denial until it actually happens. So,
all right. We'll keep it there. We've had a lot of sports this week. And while we love talking about it, that's not exactly what we're paid to do. So let's go on to the first good martini. The top U.S. commander for the Middle East told senators Thursday that he has completed an exhaustive review of the Yemen raid that killed a Navy SEAL and has concluded there were no lapses in judgment or decision-making surrounding the operation. General Joseph Vittel, who heads U.S. Central Command, says he sees no need for additional investigations into the January mission that triggered debate in Washington over what went wrong and whether important intelligence was actually gathered. It was the first military raid authorized by President Trump. Vittel, who presided over an internal review, said that he was, quote, looking for information gaps where we can't explain what happened in a particular situation or we have conflicting information between members of the organization. I am looking for indicators of incompetence or poor decision-making or bad judgment throughout all of this. In the end, he said, quote, I was satisfied that none of those indicators that I identified to you were present. I think we had a good understanding of exactly what happened on this objective, and we've been able to pull lessons learned out of that that we will apply in future operations. He said there was no need, again, for an additional investigation, and he does believe the U.S. gained valuable information on al-Qaeda militants. So, Jim, NBC, if they had a conscience, would have egg on their face at this point. Seems pretty clear that the military is satisfied with what happened in Yemen. Obviously, we regret the loss of life with the heroic service of the Navy SEAL. But from what we can tell, all the hysteria about this mission being unsuccessful seems to be unfounded.
It is. And this is where the media's animus towards Trump really gets destructive. And this is coming from a guy who was never Trump during the election that, look, when something like this happens, did something go wrong? Yeah. In other words, you never design a plan hoping to lose somebody or expecting to lose somebody. On the other hand, this is combat. This is war. And the other side gets a say in what happens during that. You never know what's going to happen in terms of the opponent's return fire and things like that. So how do you separate the fog of war and what we might call just natural consequences of armed combat in a mission like this versus a mistake that was avoidable versus something that really reflected insufficient preparation or bad planning or bad judgment or something like that? Well, this review is rather reassuring. It tells us, that this is very much, for lack of a better term, normal. That when you run a dangerous mission in a foreign country, there's always the risk of casualties. Sadly, we had one in this case. As President Trump said, they're etched in eternity. We should always be studying these things to see what happened. But I remember, almost immediately, it was like, Trump's first covert mission goes terribly wrong. There was this over-the-top and a strikingly vehement desire to tie this directly to Trump, that somehow it was his fault. That somehow the president hadn't provided the cover fire he was supposed to or something like that. And I had an exchange with a guy on Twitter where I said, okay, I know you think Trump is incompetent, but like what did he not do with this mission that he should have done? I kept kind of pecking at this guy to say, all right, tell me what the decision was. Well, he shouldn't authorize it. But the guy actually came back and said, you're right. It really wasn't Trump's decision. And, you know, I believe that violates the Twitter charter, Greg, for anybody to ever admit that they were wrong or that they acted without complete information. Now, look, does this mean, you know, and I'm glad they're doing this full review. You know, this is a circumstance where it doesn't mean it's okay or we should all shrug this off. I'm sure the military looks at every casualty and says, what happened and how can we do our best to make sure this doesn't happen again? Having said all that, this was fairly standard. And the fact that it's got, you know, some reports, including that in the New York Times, that this recovered valuable intelligence about Al-Qaeda in Yemen and a group that has been trying to smuggle bombs onto airplanes and things like that. Look, this is the job of the military is. They did their job. They achieved a certain level of success, but also at a cost that some people will debate will be too much. Unfortunately, there is no such thing as a casualty-free war. Unless you want to make everything with drone strikes, which has its own, you know, separate problem. So is this a good martini? It's a reassuring martini and one that I think you're right does kind of point out how overwrought and, in fact, instead of clarifying, obscuring a lot of the early media coverage obscured what was the truth instead of illuminating it.
Thank goodness the current media wasn't at Normandy. Can you imagine the reaction to that?
Wasn't it Eisenhower had two letters written?
Yes.
One for success and one letter of resignation for failure. I mean, this is, you know, this is how war works. Failure, failure is not an option. Sadly, failure is always an option, right? You don't want it. You wouldn't accept it. But there's always a chance that you will fail in your objective. So there's kind of this a lack of understanding of war. And this is coming from a guy who has not served in the military and has no pretensions of being a military or military history expert. In this, Greg, I know you've done a bit more of this, and it kind of would be nice if the media and the citizenry could understand the realities of military life and combat the way the military itself does.
Yeah, I have the chance to interview veterans on a fairly regular basis, and their heroism, their humility is amazing. And it's very rare that they talk about the politics involved of the war. I've interviewed a lot of Vietnam vets. They were scarred by what they came back to. But in terms of the politics at the time, they were fighting for the guy to the left and the guy to the right of them. And that's exactly how they went to their service. And you hear that regardless of the conflict that these folks were in. So always giving tribute to those who will actually go into those dangerous situations. Let's stay in the war on terror, but move a little bit to the west, I guess, for our second good martini here. This is from Reuters. U.S.-backed Syrian forces said on Thursday they were closing in on Islamic State-held Raqqa, which is the capital, and expected to reach the city outskirts in a few weeks as a U.S. Marines artillery unit deployed to help the campaign. The Syrian Democratic Forces, a militia alliance including the Kurdish YPG, is the main U.S. partner in the war against Islamic State in Syria. Since November, it has been working with the U.S.-led coalition to encircle Raqqa. A spokesman for the Syrian Democratic Forces says, quote, "We expect that within a few weeks there will be a siege of the city." We know that there's, I believe, additional forces on the way. We know that the siege is underway on Mosul. So, Jim, it looks like there's progress on that front. We know that the air sorties have picked up in recent weeks, something Trump promised would happen, and seems to be having an effect here as well. So it looks like progress is on the way.
It is. I actually came to my attention with a column by Matthew Continetti entitled "The ISIS Endgame," and one of his points is to be concerned about mission creep in Syria if and when the Syrian, the Islamic State falls and Raqqa becomes controlled by the Free Syrian Army. But it's anyway, we started military operations against ISIS, more than a year ago, probably 2 years ago. And there was kind of this sense that it was airstrikes. They talked about how they were destroying the oil infrastructure and things like that. But it seemed to be really going at a plodding pace. And so this revelation that actually, we've deployed more troops than I think most Americans know into Syria, and also that we are, the forces we are backing are really taking it to ISIS and, in fact, are knocking on the door of their capital. A lot of us kind of had this feeling that there was this state of stasis, that this stalemate. The other common phrase you heard a lot of, well, there really aren't any good guys in Syria. There is no good forces on the ground, certainly not one that was strong enough to defeat ISIS. Well, maybe that wasn't the case after all. Basically, the combination of U.S. airstrikes and these ground forces. And now apparently it looks like the U.S. contingent of Marines are positioning heavy artillery for the fight to take over Mosul and Raqqa. Within a couple of weeks, there's supposed to be this siege of Raqqa. This could be a very big deal, not just for the symbolism, but I think also that there was this fantastic article in The Atlantic back in 2015, talked to basically not just every expert on ISIS, but people within ISIS, so the ones who you could, and it was by the name Graham Wood, probably the best and most detailed, lengthy look into the philosophy of ISIS and what makes ISIS different from every other Islamist terrorist group out there. And one of the key, biggest and most key points is ISIS controls territory, right? Al-Qaeda is operating in the back alleys of all kinds of corners, and it's going to be really, really tough to track down every last cell, every last person who decides they want to sign up with the cause of bin Laden, and you know, they may or may not be in touch with Zawahiri and guys like that. Now, then there's ISIS, though, and what made ISIS stand apart from all these other groups is their claim, we are the caliphate. We are literally the Islamic State. We are a government. We are a nation. We are a kingdom. We are different from all those other groups that claim to be fighting in the name of all the Muslim people. We have established the kingdom. We have taken over territory, and this is what makes us great. And here's our capital city, and we are on the march and expanding outward and all that stuff. Well, once you take away their territory, once you take away their capital city, all of a sudden they don't have that claim to legitimacy anymore. Now, is this going to mean that ISIS goes away forever? No, but it's really going to be not just a symbolic, you know, fight, not just a serious military fight, a defeat for them, but basically they will have that element that made them special, the element that made your typical disgruntled, angry Muslim look to them as the real, you know, army against the decadent West. They lose what makes them unique, and they become just another Islamist terrorist group. And some people are going to say, well, that's good, but it's not exactly what we want. But I think this is a necessary step to defeating them, and really kind of this is a serious punch in the mouth for the cause of Islamic jihadism. So I salute that. It's a good sign. I think Khatanetti's points about being concerned about taking over and the fears of nation building in Syria and what happens the day after Raqqa falls and stuff like that, how long U.S. troops should get, all perfectly legitimate points. But I do think it's worth acknowledging the fact that ISIS, which, you know, not too long ago looked like this new great menace of our era, could be on the verge of a fairly serious defeat in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, certainly in Iraq anyway. They obviously have tentacles into other parts of the world and throughout the region, but that would be a huge blow to their reputation and their claim of a caliphate. Jim, I've got good and bad news in response to what you just said. The bad news for ISIS, and which really means good news, is Simply Safe won't help them when they've got a JDAM coming through the front door. The good news is that for everybody else who is not on the receiving end of American-led munitions, your home can be much, much safer with the help of Simply Safe Home Security. We've talked for weeks now about this story out of California where a woman who was hired to clean homes was stealing from them at the same time. So you're paying somebody to take care of your home. They burglarize you. But it's not just the cleaning lady, quote unquote. It could be anybody. You know, you try to give your key to somebody. Maybe you moved into a new neighborhood. Those neighbors across the street seem normal. I'll give them the code just in case they need it. Well, sometimes that's not the best move either. We're not trying to make you paranoid. We're trying to get you ready and to give you a secure home. And so a regular security system won't necessarily protect you from the people that you think you know and trust.
So what can you do? Well, you can get Simply Safe, which now makes it possible to know what's going on at your home at any time. If you want to check in, you can just live stream footage from the Simply Safe camera in your home directly to your smartphone anytime you like. You can get text message and email alerts when someone arms or disarms your system, so you can be sure and confident that your home is safe.
So for 24/7 protection you can really trust, go to simplysafe.com/ricochet. That's spelled SimpliSafe. Order a Simply Safe home security system today, and you'll even get our special 10% discount. Again, go now, simplysafe.com/ricochet. On to our third good martini, Jim. It's so nice to have good martinis, multiple good martinis. This is courtesy of CNN Money. The U.S. economy added a robust 235,000 jobs in February, according to the Labor Department. On Friday, the unemployment rate ticked down to 4.7 from 4.8% in the previous month. It's a vast improvement from 2009, when unemployment peaked at 10% after the financial crisis. Economists still think it'll be challenging for Trump to come through on his promise of 25 million new jobs in the next 10 years, since the unemployment rate is already low. But other good news, wage growth continued to show signs of progress after persisting at a sluggish pace for years. Wages grew a solid 2.8% in February compared with a year ago. Manufacturing adding 28,000 jobs, construction adding 58,000 jobs. So robust news. Sounds like this will lead the Fed to raising short-term interest rates by a quarter point. So what we save actually earns us some more money. Jim, obviously, we're, as the Obama folks will tell you, we've had job growth month after month after month after month. But when you look at the wage growth and some of the key sectors that are adding jobs, there's reason for additional excitement.
Yeah, this is good news on a bunch of fronts. One of them, just the idea that there's not bad news, right? If there had been any indication of a downturn or slowdown, oh, there the Trump recession has begun. We would have gotten a great deal of that. But the second thing is that this is a really good number. Now, we had gotten a payroll company report from the middle of the week that pointed to a super duper phenomenal number. And this number isn't quite that, but it's not. It's still pretty darn good and plenty of reason for cheer. What jumped out at me is the wage growth number, which people had said that, yes, the unemployment rate had been steadily declining. But, you know, one, did people feel it? Did people feel prosperity? If you had a really nice job before the Great Recession, you go and you find another job that pays half of what it used to. Are you in better, you're not unemployed anymore, but you don't feel like you're prospering or getting ahead. The American dream seems further away. And every other, lament we've heard about the economy over these past couple, 8 years or so. If this is a recovery, it's a slow and sluggish and very uneven recovery in a lot of places. So now we have a nice big month of job growth, a nice big month of wage growth, and economic confidence is rising. And we might be on the verge of what something would really feel like a serious recovery, an economic boom. Something would really make broadly shared prosperity. And I don't know about you, we have this feeling that if, you have real, genuine economic growth and people are hiring and people are getting raises and people are feeling confident about applying for a better job and getting that better job, now their income comes up a little bit higher, and keeping this circle of confidence for the future, they're buying, making bigger purchases, they feel better about taking out a loan to get a mortgage or something like that. This is, it causes a virtuous circle instead of the vicious circle that we were in for a while. So I think there's, great potential here. You don't want to count any chickens before they hatch. But look, when you look at a jobs number, just about everybody across the board is like, yeah, it's pretty darn good. Hey, let's take it. It's kind of tough to find those. And maybe we're on the verge of a real, genuine economic recovery, which can only be good for the United States.
Jim, the private sector report you referred to, I think, was pretty close to 300,000. This one's 235. I don't know if you can chalk that all up to potential losses of government jobs. So, if Trump just doesn't appoint people to a lot of these positions, the private sector numbers are going to be fantastic. It's going to be the federal numbers that are going to be dragging us down here, which in the end isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Well, I'm wondering how many positions he's supposed to appoint to that he hasn't filled yet. I've gone down the list. I know that FEMA, Center for Customs and Immigration Services, which you'd think would be a priority in the Trump administration, don't you think, Greg?
Yes. ATF,
right? This is a very pro-gun. Right now, all these positions are Obama holdovers or permanent staffers. So I don't know about you, Greg. He could take this would not actually make a dent in the unemployment numbers, but there's 2,000 jobs waiting to be filled as is, Mr. President. Let's get cracking. Come on, chop, chop.
That's the other way of looking at it. Well, Jim, speaking of the streak of job creation, our streak of not being interrupted during our podcast is at an astronomical pace at this point. It's been a very long time, other than some technical glitches perhaps along the way. But being interrupted by children has not happened in a very long time. Can't say the same for an expert on North Korea, South Korea policy who was being interviewed by the BBC. There's a lot of turmoil in South Korea right now. A court there just
upheld the impeachment of the South Korean president. So there's some turmoil. There'll be some new elections. And so the BBC was interviewing this guy, and you got to see the video. It's viral right now, so it's pretty hard to miss if you go on social media. But he's doing this serious interview, and then his toddler child walks in, and then the baby just pushes its way in with the walking rolly thing that babies do before they can walk. And then his wife comes in and drags about it. It's just hilarious. Take a listen.
And what will it mean for the wider region? I think one of your children has just walked in. I mean, shifting sands in the region. Do you think relations with the North may change?
I would be surprised if they do. Pardon me. My apologies.
What is this going to mean for the region?
My apologies. South Korea's policy choices on North Korea have been severely limited in the last 6 months to a year because of North Korea's behavior. Most recently, the use of VX gas in the airport in Malaysia, that indicates that North Korea really doesn't follow global norms.
Oh, Jim, as dads, we could totally relate to that. The awkward part, of course, is the wife diving in there and trying to grab the kids and yank them out and quietly close the door. But what, of course, nobody counts on is the eruption when you remove the kids from the room. Even though the door is closed, the wailing still comes through. We've all been there if we've got the kids.
I was going to say, good sir for that British television, Mr. Expert on Korea. We've all been there. We forgive you. It happens. There's no need for shame. This is work-life balance for a lot of working parents and things like that. And I think about all the number of times my sons have made unplanned appearances on the Hugh Hewitt show and occasionally Bill Bennett's morning show. Really eager to talk to daddy at the least convenient time and doing my best to not blurt out their names on national air. So, thank you for the host is very good natured about it. Everybody's good. I notice he never stops looking at the screen. He knows there's trouble behind him, but he doesn't see it. And we're assuming it's his wife. Maybe it's the babysitter or the nanny or somebody skids in there on socks like Tom Cruise in Risky Business. Because the first one is the toddler kind of strides in with this fantastic strut. She's having a fantastic day and can't wait to talk to daddy, who's unbeknownst to him, to her, Skyping or doing live. And you're like, oh, this is going to happen. But it's the second child coming in where you're like, okay, here comes trouble. Clearly, it's like, wait, where did my big sister go? I got to see what's going on in this room. And of course, it's this giant clunking thing, because then the poor mom or nanny comes in there and is trying to pull both of them out of the room. And this older child, the toddler, nearly gets run over by the little romper cage of the younger child. So it is chaotic. It's this wonderfully chaotic. It is this complete deadpan scene as, everything is blowing up behind him. So we all kind of needed a good, happy laugh about that. And I salute this family. The family that appears on BBC together will probably thrive together for a very long time.
Just a great laugh at the end of the week. As always, we need such a thing. Jim, have a good weekend. Talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a great weekend, everyone. And don't forget to visit our friends at Simply Safe Home Security, simplysafe.com/ricochet. Join us Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.